Well, the semester is almost wound down. How many of you are officially tired? just some of you. I mean, those of you who aren't tired are just numb. That's all that's going on. So, let me make a couple of quick announcements. By the way, Senior Preaching Week is one of the best weeks in chapel all year. It really is. For those of you who are first-year students, it is really a great week of preaching. And it's kind of peacock time for the faculty because we get to kind of spread our feathers and say, yeah, all right, you know. They actually did learn something while they were going through school. So anyway, let me note that. And then tonight we've got an event. We are doing a filming of Hidden Figures. Popcorn will be provided. And a discussion afterwards, a really actually serious discussion about race that we're going to follow it up with. And you're going to get to see a side of some of the people who walk behind the scenes here in our media department, not the arts and media department, academic department, but the people who film and that kind of thing. They're going to share on a panel kind of what their experience has been in interacting with each other on these kinds of topics. So I think it's a really special evening that we've got put together for you. So I hope if you know, some of you probably haven't seen the film, it's an opportunity to see the film, but the opportunity for the discussion afterwards should be really, really terrific. So let me just urge you to show up and, you know, if you're one of these people who believes that movies don't work without popcorn, we got you covered, okay? So my guest today is Aaron Switzer, who directs the Agape program here on campus. It's kind of a stealth program that kind of simmers underneath the curriculum. And yeah, we try not to tell people too much about it. And so but we're going to do it today. So tell us where the Agape program came from, and especially how did a nice guy like you get connected to a program like that?
Okay. Well, so, you know, at the beginning, there's a couple of things. One is, we got a lot of feedback from alumni through surveys. What do you wish that you had more of when you were a student? And there were a lot of responses that said, we would have loved to have more opportunities to minister with those who are marginalized while we were still in school. So that's kind of in the background. That informs the decision. But then what comes up is, you know, our accreditation through, we're accredited through two organizations. And through one of them, every 10 years, we add something, you know, new to what we do here at the school. And so there were a lot of proposals sent in, but eventually the one that was proposed became the Agape Project.
So they had this project, right, and this outreach and this opportunity to minister in contexts that really are designed to stretch the student by putting them in places they might not normally have had exposure to.
Absolutely.
And the chair was blank. So how did you get in the chair?
So at the time, I was working full time at the Salvation Army. Salvation Army does, you know, a lot of different things, and one of their programs is called the Adult Rehabilitation Center, and that's for homeless men with addictions. And so I'm working full time in that program, and I'm on staff as a counselor. And then just, you know, practical concerns came up. So that's kind of a crazy job. The hours can be crazy. It can be stressful if you're there all the time. And so I was beginning to think about, do I need to do something different? How's my health, you know, going with all of this? A different schedule would be nice. But then also, my wife and I have a son. And so we have a new baby, and sometimes I'm working till 11 one night, and then getting up at 4 in the morning the next, you know, and I'm like, no, this isn't going to work. This isn't sustainable. So I ask, you know, try to accommodate that, and just the way the program, it doesn't work. So just, you know, I'm just looking for something different at a certain point. And then I look online searching, and then let me check out the DTS website. And then when I read the description for the Agape Project, I was like, wow, you got to be kidding me. You know, this is a job. They pay you to do this type of thing. So, but it was really cool because, yeah, my training, I did the biblical counseling program here, and I worked as a counselor. And
you just stole my next question.
Oh, sorry.
No, keep going. Go ahead.
Sorry. So I did the counseling program. Hadn't really thought too much about, you know, doing something with education full time. But, I mean, for a long time, I've had kind of a larger question, a larger thing that I'm going after, and it's really why I became a counselor in the first place. I have a heart for taking a look at what we do as ministers of the gospel and then seeing gaps. What are areas in which we could do better? What are ways, specifically, what are ways in which people are hurting that we don't address very well at all? And that was the reason that I got interested in counseling in the first place. For me personally, I had experiences where I wasn't getting the counseling that I needed. And the more that I thought about it, I was realizing I think it's because of the lack of integration between theology and psychology that informs the practice. And so that's the reason why I studied counseling here, is I wanted to come to a place that did the integration well. But even more broadly, I'm also interested in other ways in which we don't integrate well with other social sciences or in the arts. And so looking at what the Agape Project does, it focuses in on what can we do to help students grow in compassion? How can we all grow in compassion? If the motto is to teach truth and to love well, what specific initiative do we have to equip ourselves to love well? And it's beautiful to me that that's, yes, let's address that. Let's go after that.
So talk a little bit about what the project is, and maybe for students who are new, what the requirements are to get there. Do you sign up independently to do an Agape Project, or is it wrapped into a class? How does it work?
Okay. So the Agape Project is integrated into courses on campus. So all of your opportunities to participate exist within various courses. If you go to the Agape Project webpage, it's on the DTS website, so dts.edu/agape. On the left-hand side, you'll see a menu, and I'll probably refer to that, you know, periodically while I'm talking. But one of the things that you'll see is participating courses. So that'll show you all the courses in which the professor has decided, I want to make the Agape Project part of what I do. So if you sign up for that course, if you're in that course, it's naturally going to come up because it's going to be part of the syllabus. And the way that it typically works is the professor will identify one of the assignments and then that they're going to offer an alternative. So you can either write this paper or do an Agape assignment.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, there you go. So that's how the opportunities come up. So yeah, if you're going to take advantage of it, then you know, I can do this for course credit. Great. So what you'll do then is tell your professor you want to do it. And then it happens in two stages. One is service in the community, and the second is reflection. So for the first part, you're going to pick an organization in the community that's already ministering to marginalized persons. And over the course of the semester, you'll do a minimum of 15 hours. So if you think about it, that's 1 or 2 hours, you know, spread out. And then at the end of the semester, you'll write a reflection paper. And so you're going to integrate the course content, what you learn from lectures and books and things, and then what you've learned from experience, and to bring those two things together. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
So we may have students here who don't know the area very well, don't know what's available, what ministries they could connect to. So are you working to establish those connections, and can someone come to you and say, hey, I think I'm interested in Agape Project, but I actually don't know what organization I could connect with and minister alongside and see them in operation. Do you help with that?
Yes. Okay. So yeah. So again, on the website, you see participating courses. Here's the classes where I can do it. Next to it, it says ministry directory. You click on that and it'll show you a lot of options for where you can serve. So currently in Dallas, we have about 40 different organizations that are listed there. And it's really easy to use. It's in alphabetical order by name of organization, but then you can resort it by the type of ministry it is, and then resort it again by location, because we're in Dallas, Houston, and then also hopefully by the fall we'll be in Washington, D.C. as well. But these opportunities, I've developed relationships with someone at each of them. So I'm not just, you know, Googling and pulling information off the internet. So when you're looking at the directory, you click on the name of an organization, and then it expands, mm-hmm. and you can see a full description. What does the organization do? Who's the contact person? What are the specific opportunities that have been identified that would be relevant to the
Agape
project?
Does it take you to a website for those organizations?
Sometimes I'll have a link to it, but not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, because I try to include all the information on the directory itself.
I see.
Just so that, because if you click on the organization website, you might see more volunteer opportunities, but some of them might be outside the realm of the Agape project. So I try to focus it a little bit.
So how long now has this been going on? How long have we had the Agape project on campus?
We started at fall 2015. Mm-hmm. We had been obviously developing it prior to that, but that's when it went live, and so it was available, you know, for students and for Agape credit.
Now, at the center, we sometimes talk about what we call golden moments. You know, that's an event or something that happens where you go, that's really a reflection of what we're about. That really encapsulates what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve. And then we memorialize it in one way or another. Mm. What kind of golden moments can you share with us? I'm sure you've had students that have had pretty interesting, challenging, and even developing, even inspiring experiences.
Absolutely. I mean, there have been, so many different types of experiences that students have had. I'll tell you about one in particular here in a minute, but like some of my personal favorites are, and students have different expectations of what they're going to experience or how's this going to go and what am I going to get out of it. And a lot of times we kind of gear up to say, okay, this is about compassion. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be the most compassionate person these people have ever seen, and this is going to be great. You know, I love God. I'm compassionate.
You give them a red heart at the beginning of
the
semester.
I love everybody. we come from all these different places, but some of my favorite papers to read are students who get into their experience, and then they're really surprised at themselves and disappointed because they think, man, I thought I was compassionate, but I'm really not at all. Mm-hmm. You know, here I am, and I'm supposed to, like, I read one paper, and it was, this isn't the example I had in mind, but just, I had one paper where a student had been working with elderly persons and thinking, okay, this is going to be great. This is going to be like my grandparents, and it'll be, but when she, getting into the experience, just realizing, whoa, this is, you know, some of physically what they're struggling with, I don't know.
They're reacting.
No. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, but I feel bad because of how I'm reacting. And then just giving her an opportunity to process that experience. I'm like, that's an amazing experience. That's really good.
So it's a common thing to go into this all very well intentioned and then turn around and almost have an awkward moment where you realize.
Lots of awkward moments.
Where you're sitting here going, this actually makes me a little uncomfortable to be in this place.
And that's good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
So that's why you call it a golden moment, because lights are dawning that in the midst of darkness.
That's exactly right. I had one student who went to Our Calling. That's a pretty well-known organization here on campus. For those of you who might not be familiar with it, they're here in Dallas, just south of downtown now. They have a new facility, beautiful facility. But what they essentially do is they disciple unsheltered homeless people. So a big difference working with homeless people who have already decided to move into a recovery program or a shelter, or those who are still on the street, some of them very much by choice. And Wayne Walker, his heart for Our Calling is very much to let's build relationships with people where they're at on the street. So let's go under the bridge. Let's go behind the liquor store. Let's go into the woods where they're camped, and just meet them where they are and develop relationships there and disciple them, and then let God work with them. And then hopefully they'll get to a point where they want to do more work on themselves, and maybe moving into a shelter is the next best thing. But let's start just where they are. So I had a student work with, a lot of people work with Our Calling, and one student's feedback in particular, lots of golden moments. He wrote about how, you know, he's not used to feeling like he's in the minority, mm-hmm. or that he's marginalized, mm-hmm. in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are marginalized. And so he goes and he's overwhelmed by, all of a sudden he realizes, wait a second, I'm the only person here who's not homeless. And I don't know how to, I feel out of place and I don't know how to relate to the people who are here. And so then he has all these awkward moments, like going under a bridge and kind of, you know, the, well, how's your day? How are you doing? Well, I'm homeless and cold and hungry.
May not be the right opening question,
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
But that's not his only experience, too. Yeah. He's also surprised with, asked the same question to somebody else who clearly is, you know, in a very desperate situation. They're like, I'm blessed. And this person loves God. And, wow, they're teaching me now. There's, so, yeah. All kinds of stuff.
So that was so our calling is the golden moment where what you're trying to do in part is one, to create enough of an experience that a person who ends up in ministry isn't intimidated by the kinds of opportunities for ministry that exist in places that generally speaking the church sometimes is slow to touch.
That's exactly right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the ways, and some of you may have heard me describe this in BE 101. It's long in that class, so I'll try to make it short. But I like to look at Matthew 9, starting in verse 35, and then going all the way to chapter 10, verse 8. That's a really important passage to me when understanding what is this, why are we doing it, how does it work. And before I forget, let me take an opportunity to plug one more thing on the Agape Project webpage. In that same menu where you find where am I going to serve and what courses offer this, there's another link to a resource called A Biblical Theology of Learning Through Service. And it's golden because I use it all the time. I refer to it. But especially when you're reflecting on your experience and trying to get a handle on what's going on, this resource develops the notion of God's compassion and compassionate service just from Genesis to Revelation. If God is compassionate, then I, as his disciple, should grow in compassion. And how is that shown in Scripture? So that's how it works. And that resource highlights this passage that I'm referring to in Matthew 9 and 10. But essentially, it's the moment where we see Jesus and his disciples. They're going town to town, teaching, healing the sick. And then in verse 36, we see Jesus' assessment. You know, he looked out among the crowds, saw them helpless and harassed like sheep without a shepherd, and it describes him as moved with compassion. I didn't know this, but it told me in that resource that that's a visceral response. So it's not just, I should love these people, it's not intellectual, or it's not just warm, fuzzy, but not, you know, just like empathy, but not really with structure. It's this fully embodied compassion. And when I look at that, my first thought is, who is like God? Because I know myself in those ministry settings, and once in a blue moon, I experienced something by the power of the Holy Spirit that might approximate that description, but you would not make this general description of Aaron looked out among the crowds and he was moved with compassion. No, a lot of times there's something going on and I'm either overwhelmed by how intense it is, and I'm like, I'm out of my depth and I don't want to get near this because I don't know what to do, or I'm just, it's so unlike me, I'm afraid of it, and I don't want to, on some level, I kind of don't want to know about it. Can I just kind of avoid this situation? So there's some things that make me so angry, like Jonah. I'm like, if I'm honest, just the way that I feel, I don't even want to see God do anything to this person except judge him, you know? So if I'm just like my honest gut check, that's my visceral response.
Well, we're glad you reject the
nuclear
option.
Yeah. No, yeah. I don't. Yeah. I try not to do this walking in the flesh. That contrast to me is really important, because step one, it's an opportunity to worship Jesus and say, who is like God? That's compassion. That's the real deal right there. But then right after that is the call of the disciples. So he says, the next verse is where he talks about, you know, the harvest is ready, so pray for workers to go into the field because the workers are few. And then verse 10 starts and it's the call of the 12. And so we see this link between the compassion of God embodied in Jesus in a way that you don't see it anywhere else. And it's okay that we're messed up and not there yet. You know, we're in some measure going to stay that way until we're glorified and it's okay. But incrementally, as an act of worship, but also so that he can change us and use us, it's good to put ourselves in these situations so that we're better equipped. So yes, when I move into a pastor role, I can't afford to be so angry at somebody I don't want to work with them, or to be so scared that I'm not willing to learn. I just can't afford to be that way in that setting. So this
now,
is
now you grew up here in Dallas, am I right? And grew up in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you develop this sense of seeing and stepping into this? How did that happen?
Yeah, that was a process over time. That's for sure. I mean, I grew up, you know, thankfully. We didn't have to experience like a lot of poverty and things like that at home. It was economically a pretty secure upbringing and things like that. And there's a lot of community around us. So, you know, when I became saved and I began to understand, God's been generous with me. God has forgiven me, and I don't deserve it. And then I have life struggles, and then I'm like, no, seriously, he's really forgiving and really generous. and then so I get increasingly, just through my own journey with me dealing with God, that set the stage for a lot of it. But, you know, when I was in my mid-20s, I didn't care about homeless people. I didn't have any personal experience with it. In fact, I can remember when people were panhandling and they would approach me, I'd get really angry. I'd just be like, oh, man, why don't you just leave me alone? You know. And I had a lot of those types of attitudes, and I didn't realize at the time how selfish that was for me, because all I'm thinking about is this: how this person's behavior is affecting me. So I started working at the Salvation Army actually as a video producer. As a video producer, I'm telling stories about what the Salvation Army does. I can remember distinctly interviewing someone who had graduated from the Adult Rehabilitation Center, like I described before. I was up in Pittsburgh shooting a video. This guy's telling me about the program, telling me his story. I'm interviewing him for a video, and I get this really strong feeling like, man, I wish I could turn the camera off and just talk to this guy and go deeper. And I was like, wow, where'd that come from? What's that? What is that? And then I started going to a church, and the church was very hands-on with ministering to the homeless and a lot of people with addictions. That was in Deep Ellum. And then I'm already connected to the Salvation Army. So the next thing you know, here I am at, you know, DTS studying to be a counselor. And a lot of the counseling opportunities I get are with people who are homeless. So I meet a lot of men in that situation, and I learn their stories, and spent a lot of time. It's like a 10-year-long agape project, you know? And even to this day, I mean, I'm not done yet. You know, I'm still being formed by that, and that's radically changed.
And what do you think you've learned in that journey? What do you think that has done to you and for you?
Wow. Something it's really intensified my understanding of God being in control, because I am always in the deep end of the pool at the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. I just constantly, I'm like, I've got no idea what to do. I have no idea what you need. I've never heard that before. you're freaking me out. I mean, I still have all of those reactions that I'm describing. So if it were just me, if it were up to me and how smart I am and how well equipped I am, I would never, never do this kind of work. Never. If God isn't in control in that moment, then I basically have no business being in the room trying to do it. So I'm this supporting character. God's in charge. It's this guy's story. It's between him and God. And I'm just some guy over here and sitting in a chair. So I'm going to join with him. I'm going to love him well. I'm going to be present with him, and I'm going to let God work through me. But, you know, I really have no idea what's going on. So that's a big one for me.
Interesting. We do have the mics in the row. So if you have a question either about the Agape Project or ministering to these groups, do feel free to step up to the mics.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another question. Talk a little bit about the range of opportunities that exist within the Agape Project. What kinds of groups are we dealing with? Because, I mean, you've talked about working with people who live out in the streets, but...
Anyway,
this makes me nervous.
Does
when
anyone
I see
else
two
have a question?
Faculty members, the mics were for the students. Okay, and you are a student.
Those that's are right. Those are two friendly faces.
That's true. It's just fun to harass someone who I went to seminary with. That's all. So, okay, Reg, ask a question.
My wife Lauren works for CASA. CASA is, for those of you who don't know, it's court-appointed special advocate, abused and neglected children. And if there's one thing that pushes my button, it's abused children. It is
right.
Just, I mean, the anger level just goes up like that. And I watch CSI, SVU.
guard your heart, Reg.
I know. I don't watch it anymore.
Okay.
I don't watch it anymore for this reason. I found myself... really responding, you know, that visceral response that Jesus had of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
I had a visceral response. It wasn't of compassion.
Yeah.
The cases that Lauren would bring home,
right.
Just would. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So, I mean, you guys know. I mean, you work with it all the time. So I figured, okay, this is. I saw that passage. The bowels move. You know that
yeah.
passage of compassion. So I thought, okay, this isn't right. So I need to meet these people. Well, it's really against the law for me to meet these people. I can't go with her and go in and meet these people.
Mm.
So I said, what if I was just in the car and one of these people happened to come by? And she said, you know, sometimes I forget and leave stuff in the car and I could maybe ask, who knows what would happen. So I went and I just sat in the car. Sure enough, here comes this guy and I meet him. And almost, and this is an abuser, and he's about 21, and in an instant, I felt the Lord saying, "See, this was you,
right?
And I'm here, and I'm working on him,
right?
Don't despise this,
amen."
And it, I think proximity, you know, it's easy when you're watching CSI. To develop a hard heart. When you get close, proximity promotes prayer. Proximity increases compassion. And I really, really want to applaud what you guys are doing because it brings us close to those people whom it's so easy to set apart and despise. When you get close and you see their pain and you see how much the Lord loves them, you can take that opportunity to witness and it'll increase your compassion. So keep
Amen.
Up the good work.
Thanks for that story.
Yeah.
Imagine being in a class studying Jonah and having that experience and writing your reflection paper.
I just wanted you to go back to the requirements. The THM is required, but what about the rest of the students who are doing master's degrees and other degree programs, how can they get involved in the Agape Project?
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. So yeah, required, if you're a THM student, you have to do two of these before you start your internship. But it's available to anyone. So anybody who's in any course where the Agape Project is offered, you can take advantage of this and get course credit for it. But for the students, and so that's true for anybody who isn't, you know, a THM student. Just, you know, take advantage of the opportunities as they come if you're interested. But if you're a THM from starting fall 2015 to the present, if that's when you started your program, then you have to do two before your internship.
Yes. Yeah, so it seems like in our current cultural moment that the Holy Spirit seems to be bringing to us as Christians in the church conversations about areas that we have, quite frankly, not been very good at in the past, and seeming to use different moments and events in our cultural environment to provoke some of these conversations that, quite frankly, have needed to happen for a long time. So my question is kind of twofold. One is, since a lot of these discussions can get really heated and really passionate and end up not being very helpful in the long run, How do you go about having conversations, and from your experience working in this area, how do you go about having conversations that end up being helpful and fruitful and not just really angry rhetoric, but at the same time, how do you help foster, I guess, how do you help people who, when you've learned something that you were trying to share and help under give a different perspective, when people seem very closed off to the idea that they need to change and that their perspective that they've grown up with is not the best perspective, how do you go about easing the frustration on that person's part when you're just simply trying to help them maybe see things in a different light?
Yeah, that is an awesome, awesome question. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'll give you my two cents. That's something that I don't think I have the answer to that, but that is absolutely the right question that we should be asking right now. But I'll tell you how I do it. I'm really thankful that in studying counseling that I learned conflict resolution skills, because what I do in a situation is I, at the beginning, forfeit any notion of me trying to win an argument. I make it not about that at all. And I think about, just as Reg said in his example of the person that he feels some hostility toward or whatever, and then God says, see, you were there, you're like him, and I'm here and I'm working. That's true for whoever that you're speaking with. So I can get very angry if I'm talking to somebody who I feel like doesn't get it. But then also, I used to be that person. And on some level, I also still am. So what God helps me remember is, okay, you're still in this. You're in it with them. Both you and this other person need me right now to bring some truth into the situation. So what I try to be mindful of as I'm engaging in dialogue with somebody is I'm thinking, okay, the Holy Spirit's at work here. What are the obstacles to not only understanding something about somebody else, but being open to understanding something about somebody else? And the ones that I'm aware of oftentimes are fear and anger. And sometimes it's simply just a lack of exposure. So I try to think about, if I'm speaking to this person, can I speak to what they're afraid of and speak to what they're angry about? But I've got to get to know them in order to do that. But that's the path that I try to take, because if I can in any measure be with this person and help them feel more safe, feel more secure, then maybe they'll be more willing to face their fears and their anger and those types of things. So that's not the only way to do it, but that's typically how I approach it.
I'm going to follow up with a question. What you're talking about is developing an understanding and empathy for the person that you're interacting and relating to.
Absolutely.
And, I find in the stuff that we do in cultural engagement, and sometimes in cultural engagement there is disagreement that's happening in the culture. It just happens every now and again by accident. And so...
I don't believe that.
But in the midst of having those conversations, it seems to me that part of developing empathy is starting off by doing a good job of listening.
Absolutely.
And not listening with the tendency to want to know, all right, how am I going to correct and react and respond? But listening just to listen, to hear mm-hmm. what is driving the person, what aspirations they have, you've already mentioned this, what fears mm-hmm. get in the way of those aspirations, what frustrations they may have experienced in trying to go there, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's a little bit like thinking about, and I'll use the illustration of refugees, where we think about refugees kind of abstractly, but then you ask yourself a question like this: what would it take for a person to decide to leave everything that they've known behind, take whatever they can take in a suitcase, and go to a place where they don't know anybody, they don't know the language, they don't know the culture, and they're willing to take that risk? What desperation exists that causes someone to make that move and then not know how you're going to get from A to B? You're literally going to go from moment to moment to try and make that happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you when you try and step into someone else's shoes, and you're just trying to understand first, because you can't get to agreement until first you understand what it is you're dealing with. You open up the door not to create an angry response or a reaction, but actually to connect with the person first. And then you're in a better position once you've established that trust to engage them.
Yes.
I call it getting a spiritual GPS on somebody. You know, you get a spiritual GPS on where they're coming from, what their background is. I like to tell the story that my wife's grandmother grew up in a very Christian home with a dad who was very connected to a church of respectable denomination, but his life was so opposite. When she heard Christian, she didn't hear Christian, she heard only one word, hypocrite. And so her initial reaction to anything having to do with the Christian faith was highly negative.
Yeah.
It was colored by that entire experience. And to get through that wall was going to take crashing that stereotype that she had formed in her life. And that wasn't going to take words. That was going to take relating.
Right. And can I be in a place where, can I allow her to see me as a hypocrite and not be offended so that we can...
And we can talk about it. Yeah, we can talk about the fact that God's kind of in the business of rescuing hypocrites, and it's a long-term operation.
That's right.
So in that sense, dealing with the tensions that come in life, and one of the beauties of dealing with the marginalized, I think it is that it's such a displacement for some people that you don't have any equipment in the background to know how to deal with it. You know, it's thrust upon you, and you're scrambling.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And it's good to experience that now, and to get a sense of that's okay.
And then ask the question: how do I minister into that?
That's right.
Yeah.
Earlier you said that one of the reasons for the Agape Project becoming a thing, anyway, is because alumni said they wish they had an opportunity to work with more marginalized people. Hmm. So I think my question is that as people go out into the world with their non-marginalized, theologically trained self, I think lots of times what happens is that people end up doing more harm than good because the marginalized people are really just a project for a lot of people. So is there any type of like sensitivity training? Like how do people become equipped to just go out and do things? Because I feel like a lot of times that's what happens. Because when you're talking about the guy under the bridge.
Yeah.
Yo.
That's right.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's right. I think, no, and I'm glad you brought that up because I would like to see us here move toward something like that and do some of the equipping here. The way that I'm doing it currently is I don't have that right now on campus, and so just allowing that to happen through these organizations and when things happen, then responding back to, okay, that was your experience, well, now let's discuss that. So allowing it, so right now it's more of the reflection process happening both through some of the organizations that we work with, but I can do that with also students that have gone through it as well. But I think that it would be good to have some of it up front too, and that for that just to be a part of, so that the Agape Project's not a project. Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you for saying that.
I was thinking about when it came to the Agape Project, that there's type of work that I've been doing for a lot of years and, you know, very comfortable in that service and in that ministry. And then when you were sharing about people's golden moments, I guess, or their stories, it occurred to me that is it better that I would seek to do something that is, I guess, out of my sort of ministry comfort or norm to challenge me? Or, you know, will I potentially have a, you know, better, more impact, I don't know, staying where I, you know, I'm kind of comfortable in terms of ministry, or I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Okay, yeah, great question. I'd say if you're only going to do one, challenge yourself. If you're going to do more than one, then an advantage to going through the process of an Agape assignment in a ministry setting where you're already working, you give yourself an opportunity to do some theological reflection that maybe you haven't done yet. So to take the opportunity. Here's, I'm already serving, but can I take the content of this course and also the opportunity to do a reflection paper and then to better integrate what I'm learning with what I'm doing. Now, if you feel like